Hello, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned in to my weekly Wellness Update podcast, bringing you the health news with the views that help you to understand what is going on in the world of nutrition and health, and hopefully giving you some tips on how to better get along and live a healthier life. First up in the news is an article on statins. Most of you know I'm not a fan of these medications, a rampantly overprescribed pill that is bilking tens of billions of dollars a year out of taxpayers and costing insurance and whatnot. It is one of many drugs that are driving up the cost of health care for everyone with no public health benefit. I repeat, that is no public health benefit that can be proven or demonstrated. All right, new study out here showing that these drugs increase the risk for pneumonia by 26%. This is in a human population, a study published in the British Journal of Medicine. And it increased serious pneumonia by 61%. This was not the result the authors were hoping to find. They were hoping to find that statins actually could help with immunity. Instead, they find the opposite. This is not at all surprising, since statins are an immunosuppressive drug and have even been researched for immune suppression in organ transplant patients. Of course, this is extremely bad news for anybody taking a statin going into a potentially hard flu season, because, of course, once a person gets the flu and they're older, they're more likely to get pneumonia, and if statins help that process along, then they are more likely to suffer extreme consequences from the flu. Of course, the doctor's handing out these things to every older person, even though there's no data to support that for the grand majority of them there's any improvement or benefit in terms of mortality. Here we have a situation where the very same medication is likely to make them more sick. So, what do you do? Well, taking statins would not be on your list of things to be healthy. That is for sure. All right, estrogen therapy increases the risk of ovarian cancer. This is a very, very large study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, essentially looking at every Danish woman between the age of 50 and 79 for a number of years, and what they found, that's over 900,000 women, what they found is that those on horse urine extract estrogen and synthetic progesterone had a 38% increased risk for ovarian cancer. Even if those drugs had been stopped, the risk remained at 16%, although it did decline over time. Since ovarian cancer is often fatal, this is not a trivial amount of risk or problem. It is going to result in a number of deaths every year, and it's just one more thing to go along with the heart problems and breast cancer risk associated with this therapy. We're finding all these things out after the fact, after decades of, you know, standard medical care, when these things were just simply handed out to every woman. Women must beware. This is a dangerous medication. Another study in a similar vein, women with hot flashes at extreme risk of heart attack if using hormone replacement therapy. Once again, it's the estrogen from horses and the synthetic progesterone. And what they found, this was in older women, and of course the only reason older women, the main reason older women would be taking these things is to stop hot flashes that have just lingered. But what they found is that if these older women, average age 66, took this estrogen, they had a 900% increased risk of a heart attack in the first year. That's really pretty startling. Now, back in 2002, or 2001, whenever it was, when the big paradigm shift occurred, it was because of increased heart risk within the first year of use, even in women at age 50. Obviously, this study is saying that if you're a bit older and you take these things, you're really in trouble, especially if you have any pre-existing cardiovascular glitches. This is just going to be like pouring gasoline on the fire in terms of causing a problem to you. So, again, you know, it's hard. Any older women, I mean, yeah, maybe she'd be taking this for vaginal dryness, but mostly she's going to be taking it to stop hot flashes, and that is what causes the problem. If you're having hot flashes at an older age and you take this stuff, whammo, a 900% increased risk for a heart attack. That is Not good odds. Not good odds at all. All right. On the positive side of this, this is an animal study which showed that curcumin may reduce the risk of breast cancer in women who have used HRT. In other words, what they did was they exposed various mice to these toxic estrogen and progesterones, and they also had, you know, they had their control group, and then they had their treatment group, which used curcumin. And the control group compared to the treatment group, of course, developed the expected lesions in breast tissue that lead to cancer. And the curcumin group, this process was dramatically slowed down and in some cases stopped, even possibly reversed. Well, the curcumin did not lower the levels of estrogen and progesterone, meaning it didn't clear out the hormone, but it did protect the breast tissue from the hormone. Well, that's very good news for women who are either having for some reason to be on these or who have taken them and are wondering what they can do. Curcumin would be at the top of the list of nutrients to help with protection, as with nutrients like iodine and, you know, cruciferous vegetable extracts like the indole-3-carbinol and the diindolemethane. That's I3C and DIM. I mean, these things would be at the top of anyone's list who's trying to protect themselves either during or as a result of a history of use of these things, you know, having been put on them and only to find out later they were dangerous. So, of course, there's a lot of women still on these today. You'd be surprised how many people are still taking these things, even though they are obviously a huge problem to health. Then we had this week Monsanto announcing, well, as my title says, Monsanto Frankenfoods take aim at wheat. Wow, you know, 5 years ago Monsanto was planning a big wheat GMO project. It was too much ruckus was raised, and so they gave up. Well, now they're going back at it. They think the timing is right. They think farmers are ready. They don't really care about people. They think farmers are ready for this. You know, and I don't know what it takes to get through to the American public on this topic. I mean, obviously the FDA allows this to be hidden from the public, not making them label food as GMO. There's no requirement for, you know, the soy crop or the corn crop, both of which are now heavily GMO, to be labeled as such, or the canola oil crop. You know, you basically have to buy organic because organic by definition can't be GMO, although even a small percentage of it might still be, just because it's gotten so intertwined in the food supply, you can't get rid of these things. Well, now they announced they're going after wheat again in a big time way. And, you know, I just don't get it. When will the people learn and wake up to this? This is tampering with the essence of food. I mean, they're splicing toxins into the DNA of food. That means the essence of food, which should be something healthy and good. It's not just that a pesticide is on the surface that could maybe be washed off or cleaned off. It is that a pesticide is in the essence of the food. And it's not just one pesticide, mind you, that they're now splicing into these things. It's up to five different toxins are being spliced into the internal function of food. Oh, my God. You know, I don't know. Some people are just will do anything for a dollar. Monsanto's one of them. They've proven that. They have a long-term corporate history of damaging human health with their PCBs and their aspartame, and they have a long-term history of buying protection from the FDA with a revolving door employment agreement, apparently. I mean, I don't know, but it's revolving door management. Goes from the FDA back to Monsanto, Monsanto back to the FDA. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. These unelected bureaucrats at the FDA and the private industry they're supposed to be regulating are really in it for profit and working against the health of the people. And this is, you know, Monsanto, and of course has teamed up with Cargill to put in these frankenfoods all over the world. I mean, I think both companies should be totally boycotted. I don't see any way around this. The frankenfoods are pathetic. There is no place for them in the human food supply. It doesn't matter that they make it easier on farmers. You know, you put inflammatory toxins into food, so now you have to eat food that's inherently inflammatory? I mean, this is absolutely absurd. I mean, I don't know what kind of psychosis is setting in at the FDA and these regulatory places, but, you know, they're nuts. They're just flat out crazy people. And yet, you know, they can't even protect the food supply from blatant poisoning, partly because the quality of the food supply, you've got, you know, all these fast food businesses making horrible quality food, and then you've got Mexico, who knows what the standards are down there, shipping things into the United States. Not saying everything from Mexico is bad, but my goodness, you know, it certainly cost the California tomato farmers a bundle because, you know, the FDA thought that's where the problem was when it wasn't. I mean, I didn't see the FDA writing the California tomato industry a check for the $100 million of damage their fraudulent warnings cost. We have problems, obviously, with the regulation of our food supply. And it's not an issue of throwing more money at the FDA. All they're going to use that more money for is, quite frankly, manipulating and doing what they want in a way that isn't necessarily going to help health at all. So they come up with these excuses like, oh, we need more money to do this, and then they want the money with no strings attached so they can do that. And that happens to be whatever their vested interests want to use it for, which is usually hassling people like the dietary supplement industry while you know, enabling new biotech drugs to come to the market with little or no ability to regulate them or even understand what's going on with them. It's just bizarre what goes on in this world, but that is what we are up against. All right, carnosine may help prevent and reverse cataracts. This is an animal study, and the cataracts are formed when proteins are damaged in your eyes from free radicals. They begin to form tangles. And that forms a lens, which then, of course, interferes with your vision. This happens to individuals as they get older, accumulated free radical damage, and then, you know, it just kind of keeps on going. Well, carnosine was found to not only prevent these proteins from sticking together, but could even reverse the accumulation of damaged proteins in the lenses. Well, we don't know at this point how much carnosine in a human would have to take to approximate these results, or if they are even approximatable in humans. But there are many reasons to take carnosine, ranging from the anti-aging aspects to the stress management aspects, very good for irritation, agitation, this kind of thing. And so it certainly won't hurt anyone to have carnosine in their blood, which will then flow into their eye and maybe help things out. You never know. But this animal study is certainly predictive that carnosine could be quite helpful to maintaining eye health over the course of your lifetime. Something to consider if you have cataracts on your concern list. All right. Overweight postmenopausal women are low in vitamin D. Well, that's an interesting study. Certainly, and in this study, they were using some X-ray technology to look at the total body fat and regional fat mass in these women. And they found that whenever the fat mass went up by their measurement system, the vitamin D levels were down. There was an inverse relationship. And while vitamin D may not be a one-shot wonder for weight loss, it certainly means that if your vitamin D levels are low, something goes wrong with the metabolism of fat. And it makes it more likely that you'll then gain weight regardless of any other variable. So you do not want to run low in vitamin D. This is probably one reason why people pack on the pounds in the winter. Of course, they're less active and there's other reasons. But vitamin D is certainly its own individual variable. We know that vitamin D interacts in fat metabolism and the health of your own stored fat, where the white adipose tissue is accumulating calories. Vitamin D is necessary for normal metabolism in there. We don't know exactly what it's doing yet. Maybe somebody will figure that out soon, but we do know, based on a variety of data coming from teenagers, coming from the success dieting in vitamin D. There have been a number of studies on this, but this is the first one that clearly shows an inverse relationship of vitamin D to the degree of overweightedness in a postmenopausal woman. So keep your vitamin D levels adequate, up to 2,000 units a day for everyone in the winter, and you may need more, but get a blood test if you are taking that much and you're just not sure. You want to check your levels beyond a baseline of about 2,000 units, then go get your blood tested to see if it's enough or not. Okay, last news story this week. Big Pharma and friends poised for massive profits from healthcare reform. Well, the Democrats, of course, are really struggling even in amongst their own party to try to figure out what to do here. One part of the Democrats wants to cover everybody right now and then figure out how to pay for it later. The moderate Democrats are saying, hold on a second here. Let's try to figure out how we're going to contain costs and then plug more people into the system. And they're butting heads with each other. And, of course, that's slowing everything down because the Republicans don't have the votes to stop this legislation. That's a given. So we're seeing that squabbling, intra-party squabbling going on. But there is one group that's pushing very hard, and it's not squabbling at all. This is a group of lobbyists that involve Big Pharma, the American Medical Association, hospital groups, and insurance groups. Back when Hillary Clinton and the Clintons were trying to get their health care reform through, that proposal basically was shot down by these very same lobbies who didn't like what they saw. Well, now these lobbies last year spent $484 million to prime the pumps to get into this new legislation what they want so that they can push it through and basically make tons of money off of guaranteed sales of this new scenario that's going to go down on the American taxpayer. Well, we've got hundreds or more billion dollars a year in existing fraud in this system because of these groups and how they divide up the big pharma sales. I mean, you know, for example, you've got antipsychotic medications bankrupting the Medicaid system across for all the states because they're having to give these off-label use of these drugs to kids to placate their symptoms. And they do this in orphanages and underprivileged and whatnot, the poor people. And it's extremely expensive. And, of course, it's not even of any real benefit other than making somebody more docile. And we're paying a fortune for this. And this is just one example. We have the same kinds of scams with ADD medication, with antidepressants, with statin medications, with bone drugs, with antacid medications. I mean, Western medicine is treating symptoms and charging an arm and a leg for them, never getting to the bottom of any problems. The drug companies love this because as long as you treat a symptom and don't solve the cause of anything, you keep having the symptom, you keep having to take the drug. This is how they make money. And they locked in huge profits. They're you know, spending an arm and a leg. You don't see anything being done by the Obama administration to address this problem. The Republicans aren't interested in addressing this problem because the Republicans are all bought off by Big Pharma. And so you've got Republicans and Democrats alike pointing fingers at different issues when they're ignoring the real source of the grand majority of the problem. And that is nothing but pathetic, but that's how Washington works, and that is... Well, I could go on and on. In fact, I've written a fairly lengthy article here, but I might write a real detailed one on this subject where I really delve into all the different aspects of fraud and excess expenditure based on this paradigm because it is mind-boggling. And neither political party is willing to expose it, even though it is the source of the rapid rise in costs of health care for all Americans and for... the injuries that occur, millions of injuries a year occur at the hands of this paradigm. And when you stop and think about it, the FDA doesn't know the actual risks of almost any medication on the market today, even if it's been on the market for 10 or 20 years. That's how bad they are and how negligent they have been at ordering follow-up studies of even commonly used blockbuster medications. They have just basically turned the entire American population into a big pharma experiment, and unfortunately, the agenda of the FDA management is only to expand on that in the coming years, which is, of course, something I warned about in my book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America. Nothing has changed. It's only progressing and getting worse, and putting a healthcare system in place that expands the use of this fraud is, of course, negligent. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat, even if you believe fully in this new healthcare plan or you don't. You've got to stop and ask yourself, how can we pay for this if the system itself is based on hundreds of billions of dollars a year in the fraudulent use of medicine? My God, I mean, it's just so important for people to understand this and to start bringing this up as the topic to talk about in the context of this, because if we could stop this fraud, we could probably get a much better health care system, regardless of how it is structured, because then we would just be paying for legitimate health care needs that people have. You know, you've got to understand that when you have all this fraud and all this expense, that shortchanges money for people who actually need something, who actually have a health problem, especially one that's of no fault of their own, that they are struggling to pay for. You know, these things have to be taken into account and dealt with. And the only way to really help out and have a safety net for these people is not to be wasting hundreds of billions of dollars a year on absolutely nothing, which is only for the profits of these big pharma and friends, and how the pie is going to be divided up. All right, it is time now for the questions of the week. And if you have a question you'd like to send it to me, go ahead and send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. And we are going to be starting something new here very shortly. So if you would like to call in a question, leave that question on a voice recorder, call the number 206-426-1390. That's 206-426-1390. And leave a question there for me. All right, first question of the week comes from Harold. He says, does coenzyme Q10 interfere with Coumadin? Should Q10 be avoided if a person needs to take Coumadin? Well, this is something that individuals may encounter now when they go to their doctor. Doctors will sometimes warn them not to take coenzyme Q10 if they're on Coumadin. There is no science to support this that's credible in terms of for everyone. There have been a few case reports of Q10 seemingly clearing Coumadin faster. There's some science to show that Q10 does bind to some of the Coumadin receptor areas or molecular area target areas and may therefore enhance its clearance from the body. This shouldn't surprise anyone. Coumadin's a poison. Nutrients are used to clear toxins. But does this mean that anyone taking Coumadin should avoid Q10? Well, of course not. There is no study that shows this. This is just theoretical gobbledygook that the medical profession has dreamed up to get people to not take coenzyme Q10, which, of course, is extremely helpful to your heart. So anybody who wants to take Q10 should take it and then have their Coumadin dose titrated accordingly to their consistent coenzyme Q10 dose. Very simple solution. And if a doctor's pressing you to not have CoQ10, ask them for a specific study, a human study, showing, and not just a case report, showing that this is indeed a problem. They won't be able to come up with one because there isn't one. And in the only one that there is, it was shown not to be a problem. So, you know, it's just one of these things where the anti-vitamin medical establishment hates things like vitamin E and CoQ10 and would love nothing more than people to be on rat poison and not on anything useful to them. Coenzyme Q10 is vital to the function of your heart and very important for individuals so that their heart pumps properly and thus may, in fact, help them with the very issue that Coumadin is supposed to also be helping them with. So I don't see any problem there, and I think, Harold, that individuals should not be concerned about this. Darlene, I was diagnosed with Addison's disease about 2 years ago. I take 15 milligrams of Cortef daily. I want better answers for this. I'm low on DHEA based on blood and saliva testing, and I'm wondering if I should use 7-keto DHEA or regular DHEA since it also converts to estrogen and testosterone, and I'm low on these things. Well, Darlene, I don't have any problem with you taking some extra or some specific DHEA. I wouldn't go more than 25 milligrams. If you do, you really have to watch for side effects such as facial hair growth and other things that are adverse in response to taking it. You could try up to 50 milligrams, but you'd just have to really be paying attention and not just doing it blindly. Even taking 7-keto DHEA can be helpful and will spare existing testosterone and estrogen. So you do need a better DHEA level. It's the buffer for your adrenal glands. I don't think you have a problem taking some of the actual DHEA. Just pay attention. Bedita says, your weekly podcast and news updates are much appreciated on this side of the pond. I think I've learned More from your books and articles than my entire time studying at the university. And finally, the penny is beginning to drop that there is a difference between eliminating the symptoms and treating the root cause of disease. I would like to know your views on two natural products. The first one is raspberry leaf tablet or extract for balancing female hormones. I personally find this very useful for PMS, hormone-related mild acne, and premenstrual tenderness in particular. Am I falling into the trap of treating the symptoms? What if the problem is caused by exogenous estrogens and is beyond our control? Does this still not justify the use of mild phytoestrogens like raspberry leaf tablets? Well, I don't have any problem with you using some phytoestrogens. When I'm talking about them in kind of a negative context, I'm talking about women using these products and expecting them to create improvement when oftentimes they confuse one's body and interfere with normal function. Well, that's not going to happen to everyone. And in your case, you obviously feel better using this thing, so I got no problem with it at all in any way, shape, or form. So all I'm trying to say is that when you take a phytoestrogenic product, such as Dong Quai or something of that nature, and you're not feeling better, maybe even you're feeling worse, realize it could be from that product. And don't just think because it's supposed to be good for you, it is. On the other hand, if you're using one of these things and you noticeably feel better, great, fine, wonderful. Got no problem with that. Last question you had is also, could you kindly comment on citronol as a natural product for cholesterol? Well, the issue is citronol is a branded ingredient. It contains some citrus polymethoxyflavones, nobiletin, and tangeritin. We use it in our leptinol product along with DHA. It's a very good product for modulation of how fats move in your body. It helps dampen triglyceride synthesis. It helps modulate a lipoprotein, apoprotein B, which is important. You don't want a lot of that in the cholesterol you do have. So it's a modulator. It's just something you'd use to help maintain your healthy cholesterol levels. I like it a great deal. It is not like, say, red yeast rice extract, which acts like a statin. It's a different mechanism entirely. I'm not in favor of red yeast rice because I don't like the mechanism of statins. Jeannie says, could you help me with a friend? He is 54 years old and is trying to stop being addicted to alcohol. It is not an everyday problem, but a problem nonetheless. He also needs something for his nerves, which were also damaged years ago as a burn victim. Well, the problems are one and the same, Jeannie. When you have alcohol tendency, craving for alcohol, you're talking about brain pain, and then you're talking about something that makes brain pain go away. And this mechanism is the same for alcohol as it is for food, as it is for any other drug, or things that are just bad behaviors that people can't seem to stop doing. They give the common thread of all these things is they give a pleasure burst and rises the brain out of pain, albeit temporarily and regardless of the long-term side effects. So you have to, in any case like this, you have to raise the brain's threshold and tolerance for pain so there's no craving or urge. The most basic nutrients in the case of someone with alcohol are B vitamins, because B vitamins are depleted by alcohol, especially vitamin B1. And so extra super B complex, for example, would be a first thing. A specific, there's been some studies showing that the amino acid glutamine can help with acute alcohol cravings, and so that's not bad to have on hand. We, of course, use the product GIN Muscle Helper. And, of course, any kind of nutrients that build brain health, there's a lot of them, DHA, acetyl-L-carnitine, phosphatidylserine. The list is pretty lengthy. There's many, many things that can help. Basically, it falls under the stress management nutrition. If you look at our website under the health topics, under stress management, you'll have all kinds of suggestions. A person doesn't have to do all these things. They just have to do enough to raise their brain to a higher energy level so they're not dipping down into pain. And when they're not dipping down into pain, then they don't crave something that they shouldn't be consuming. True for alcohol, true for food, true for anything else. Diane says, my father is 80 years old, and sadly, he frequently falls asleep when trying to read, sitting in a chair, or even during our conversation. At these times, his blood pressure is low. He takes Synthroid, a statin, and a few other medications. Why does he do this, and what do you recommend? Please help. Well, the basic reason he does this, Diane, is he isn't getting any oxygen to his brain at the rate that he should. Now, of course, Synthroid can cause this problem in and of itself because Synthroid, which is T4, goes into the brain. The brain converts T4 to T3 on a cell-by-cell basis, unlike everywhere else in your body. So if your blood levels of T4 in your body are rising from the drug and they go into the brain as high, it can actually conk out your brain's function. So in many cases, he may just be on a little bit too much Synthroid. If you talk to his doctor about that. Statins, of course, are not good for nerves in the first place, and over time they're going to weaken nerve function, nerve transmission. That will, of course, play into his problem. I couldn't tell you if either one of these medications are actually the cause. They could be. They might not be. They may be a percentage of the problem. But the bottom line is, regardless of the medications, his brain is not oxygenating. The way to get better oxygen to your brain is, of course, to exercise a little bit. A little more walking would be good. Some strength training helps because muscles are responsible, 50% at least, for pumping blood up to your head. It's not just your heart that pumps blood to your head. It's your muscles as well. A product like Cardio Helper, Daily Super E, these are excellent products for getting more oxygen to the brain, helping improve the oxygen quality of circulation. And they can be tried along with any of these medications, certainly, and see if it helps him. But that's what I would try, Diane. Del Marie says, I've been suffering from hypothyroid for over 13 years now. Losing weight has been a struggle for me. Now at 40, I'm feeling tired, depressed, and have no energy. My menstrual cycles have stopped, and I just don't feel well. Every time I go to see my doctor, I tell him about it, but he keeps saying that my thyroid levels are fine. He just put me on phentermine to lose weight. I have been taking it for almost 2 months, and I've only lost 10 pounds. He also put me on Cytomel. I haven't bought it yet. My question is phentermine safe to use along with Cytomel? Let me know the product I should first start using. I know the leptin diet is the one of them. I was in college taking nursing and had to withdraw due to the fact that I could not concentrate, I could not focus, and learning became so hard. Well, a couple of things here, Del Marie. First of all, phentermine isn't safe with or without Cytomel. Phentermine is a stimulant. It wrecks leptin function in your brain, which is already not working right. And as soon as you stop using it, you will gain the weight right back that you just lost. And I would do that before you lose too much, because you don't want to be on a stimulant like this. Cytomel is biologically active T3. I don't like that product either because it bypasses all your control systems. So while you've been pleading apparently for thyroid for some time, your doctor actually prescribed you T4, but T3, which is, in my opinion, reckless. Because it bypasses control systems that, you know, you got to figure out what's going on with your body. I mean, you've got no energy. Your cycles, menstrual cycle stopping at age 40, that's because you have no energy. That's a stress-induced elimination of your menstrual cycle. You have got to get your energy systems going. When you complain of being foggy, can't focus ever since back in college days, you've obviously got some kind of a toxicity problem, digestive problem, sinus problem, something going on. You are toxic. That's why your metabolism is being poisoned. You've got to get on to detoxification. You probably have a candida problem. I'm not sure from talking to you, but you need to do things to help you make energy. That'd be things like the Daily Energy Multiple Vitamin, Thyroid Helper, Iosol Iodine, Pantothene, which will help clear the brain fog. And then you need to get on to detoxification, things like Daily Balancer, Immune Plus, maybe some Candida Helper. On our website at wellnessresources.com, you should study up on the weight management section as well as the detoxification pages, because therein you will find yourself. You don't have to do everything, but you've got to get moving in the right direction because you've got toxic fat. When you have toxic fat, you don't lose it very easily, and you don't feel good. The reason you don't lose it is because your body put the toxins in the fat, stored them together to get them away from your heart and other body organs because you're poisoning yourself. And now when you try to lose weight, your body won't give up that fat because it would poison you again. And you've got to get your detox systems working right. So you really need to look into this. There's no quick fix for your problem, but there is a fix. And you need to get on a path here that will actually get you somewhere. Simply using speed to lose weight is very, very dangerous. It's very hard on your heart. It's very hard on your kidneys. And it is very high risk for weight regain after weight loss, which is not a good way to lose weight. All right, Kathleen says, I have an extreme case of dry eyes. I am taking omegas, omega-3 fish oil, etc., with little effect. If it is Sjogren's syndrome, is there any alternative way for this? Well, sometimes, Kathleen, you have to get the dose of DHA, the DHA part of the omega-3, up to 2,000 milligrams of DHA. That's a lot, but sometimes you don't always need that much, but sometimes you do. And if you get that high enough, it may really help the dry eyes. Another thing that helps the dry eyes a lot is the N-acetylglucosamine, a special kind of glucosamine that helps make mucus secretions in your body. And so that's a really good thing. If you have overall body dryness, you have to figure out why. You can do things locally that will help. But if you have overall body dryness, then the same lubricants your eyes would use are all being used up everywhere trying to calm things down. Internally, dryness is caused by extra inflammation and stress chemicals. So you got to look for, again, toxicity issues, stress issues as a systemic reason why your eyes would be dry. And, of course, those things also are what trigger autoimmune problems like Sjogren's anyway. You've got to stabilize that. So reducing inflammation is what you would do to benefit a Sjogren's situation, which is doable, but you don't really know if you have that or not. I'd start with high-dose DHEA and some GI and muscle helper and see how much that helps your eyes, and then look into these other issues that may be drying you out. Terry says, how does delayed gastric emptying due to hypochlorhydria affect leptin and blood sugar regulation? Well, whenever your stomach isn't working right and it's delaying the release of food, the stomach hormone called ghrelin gets all bent out of shape, and that's, of course, making you crave things. So you'll crave things when you're not hungry. I mean, you think you're hungry, but you're not really hungry. You don't get proper full signals, so it has a pretty dramatic effect. You can certainly take hydrochloric acid if you need to. Even just basic digestive enzymes without hydrochloric acid may help. And remember that hydrochloric acid is the highest concentrated energy molecule in your body. So if you're tired, you don't make much. And so anything you do to help your body make more energy, you'll be able to concentrate hydrogen more efficiently. You'll make hydrochloric acid better. So that's one of the keys there, is just restoring energy. Once you get that digestive tract moving along in a more rhythmic pattern, you will, of course, have better leptin function. Last question of the day comes from Brian, who says, I was wondering if you could speak about Codex on your podcast. From what I've read, Codex mandates will be taking effect on December 31st, 2009, in the USA, if nothing is done. For anyone who knows anything about this dubious organization, this is not a good thing. Since you are obviously a big proponent of nutritional supplements, I would love to hear your take on the whole thing. Well, Brian, I've written extensively about the subject of Codex in my book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America. That book's about 3 or 4 years old now. Not much has changed. It is a huge problem. As far as your date of December 31st, 2009, that is not a Codex doomsday date. On that date, the European Union is adopting codex-like guidelines amongst their member states, which is an extreme suppression of health freedom. It's actually not Codex doing this, but it's a codex-like plan, and is considered to be compatible with future Codex regulations. It doesn't have anything to do with the United States of America. Other than that, it is a huge wake-up call of what happens when you go the socialized route. Countries like Great Britain, who are totally against this, are struggling mightily to have any way out of this because they're bound by the laws of the European Union in this regard. So they are in trouble over there, and it is not a good thing at all. Now, Codex itself, which is a food group of businesses that amongst themselves decide how they're going to implement trade guidelines, well, they have a subset of that that's related to dietary supplements that's run by the Germans. Of course, our FDA is a pain in the rear end and sides with the Germans against the United States citizens towards the goal of increasing regulations. What Codex is actually trying to do is not eliminate dietary supplements. They are trying to eliminate quality dietary supplements in doses that will actually do something for you. This is because the Germans, Bayer, BASF, and the Germans that are involved with this, their country has no raw materials and basically produces nothing of value to natural health. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality. So the Germans, very clever at making things out of coal tar, make a lot of vitamins out of coal tar and other synthetic chemicals. Well, they want those on the market, obviously, because that's what they sell. They want them on the market, but they don't want them on the market in doses that would actually do anything. Of course, if you took large doses of their products, you'd die or you'd be injured because they're toxic as heck. There's synthetic beta carotene, there's synthetic vitamin E. I mean, the garbage produced by the Germans is disgusting. And the fact that the Germans are in control of setting guidelines for health is equally disgusting. And they're using a public health model, which means essentially that if one person in 10,000 could react to a certain dose of a vitamin, then that's too much to take for anybody in the whole population. This is what they call their safe upper limits, which they're trying to establish for all vitamins. So they're going to make it so, their goal is to make it so that you can't have any kind of vitamin above a dose that might react even in the smallest fragment of the most dysfunctional part of the population so as to protect the public health. Well, that's a bunch of garbage. And that's what Codex is all about. Now, they plan on implementing this through trade guidelines and trade restrictions. So if somebody weren't to comply to this, then they would be open to fines. And it wouldn't just be within one industry. It would be across industries. So, for example, if the United States were in violation of Codex guidelines for dietary supplements, if and when they're ever released, then somebody trying to trade tires on the open market would have to pay a fine. This is how bizarre this is. This is why we can't give our sovereignty over to international bodies and dive into the one world government crap, because they're just going to usurp our freedoms. And, you know, Codex should be shot down, should be dismantled, and so on and so forth. It is a disgusting group, especially on the dietary supplement angles. You know, these are bureaucrats that exist only to create laws that enable them to sell their trash around the globe. You know, they don't want anything to be labeled. They don't want anything to... it is what it is. So how much of a threat is it? It's like a big steam ball rolling down the hill, picking up momentum. It moves at the pace of a snail, but it moves nevertheless, and it is moving in a direction that is not good for anyone in the United States. And it is a big, huge problem. But because it isn't happening right this very second, it's hard to get people motivated to do much of anything about it. The most reliable source of information on Codex, besides me, would be Scott Tipps at the National Health Federation. That's www.thenhf.com. If you want updates, his group is the only group that sits as a non-governmental organization at the Codex meetings and actually can voice concerns. He's on top of this issue, although I can't say that he can change this issue. He at least informs us of what is going on. That's my friend Scott Tipps. You want to avoid, like the plague, anything Rima LeBeau has to say, because she's nothing but in this for having you send her a donation so that she can travel around the world and have fun and cause all kinds of false alarm bells to be sounded on a routine and regular basis so that you will send her money. That's her group, and I would just... yeah, as you can see, the health freedom community is fairly fragmented, which, of course, isn't good if you're trying to fight something. My effort at fighting this is to inform people as best I can of the value of their natural health options. That's what I'm doing with this podcast. That's what I do with our company, Wellness Resources. We're trying to educate. I don't know any other way other than getting more people interested in natural health and using it to solve their health problems. Because we need a lot more people if we're ever going to defeat Codex, because Codex is coming sooner or later, and it is a huge problem. Maybe not in the next 5 years, but certainly in the next 10 to 15 years. And the powers that be, the regulatory forces in our government, are helping it along intentionally, along with other nasty programs like the FDA Trilateral Cooperation Charter, which is an agreement with Canada and Mexico to basically hassle dietary supplement companies. The current FDA posture on dietary supplements looks like it's under the Obama administration, appears at this point that it's going to be highly regulatory. That's the indications we have at the moment, that it's going to be very, very anti-supplement. And that is not a good thing, but that seems to be the track that it is heading on while our president continues to smoke his stupid cigarettes. All right, well, that's it for this week. If you have any questions you would like to send to me, please send them to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. And you can also call in a question to 206-426-1390. Have a great week. Take care and be healthy.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.